This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at OmahaSteaks.com. That's OmahaSteaks.com and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're really tearing into a huge pile of sources today. It's complicated stuff. High-stakes politics, post-election analysis, big economic shifts, even institutional conflicts. Okay, let's try to unpack this. The goal today, cut through the noise. We want to figure out why that government shutdown really ended, what was actually driving those recent election results, and you know, where the economic anxiety is hitting hardest from the gas pump all the way to Wall Street.
Exactly. We're synthesizing these really complex interconnected stories. We're looking at like the tiny details of Senate votes, but also these huge shifts in how consumers feel and even corporate tax strategy, trying to figure out why it all matters right now.
Right. And how it all connects. Okay, let's dive straight into that political poker game. Our sources use that great line. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. There was this Senate breakthrough deal, right? Secured a 60-40 cloture vote.
That's right.
So what were the immediate tangible things in that deal? What actually stopped the crisis?
Well, the immediate relief was keeping the government funded through January 30th. Mm-hmm. And critically, getting most federal workers back on the job, including about 4,000 who'd been let go. And they get back pay.
Okay, back pay too. That's important.
Definitely. But the sort of political core was the longer-term funding promise through September next year for some key areas, military construction, the VA, FDA, and significantly SMA, UPTE.
SNAP, food stamps. That feels like where the real human leverage was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cutting off that aid would have caused immediate visible suffering.
Exactly. That risk, you know, Americans going hungry, that was the ticking clock. Mm-hmm. But there was also this fascinating institutional bit tucked in there, protection for the Government Accountability Office, the GAO.
The GAO. What's the significance there? They're like Congress's auditor, right?
Yeah, basically Congress's nonpartisan watchdog, making sure money's spent right, holding the executive branch accountable.
So why protect them?
Well, what's really interesting here, according to the sources, is that this wasn't a Democratic demand. It came from moderate Republican senators. Yeah. It kind of suggests this deep mistrust of executive spending, maybe even within their own party, or at least some Republicans wanting to flex their oversight muscles against the White House.
Okay, let's talk political maneuvering. The vote itself, 60-40, sounds very precise, highly structured.
Oh, absolutely. It looks like it was managed to hit exactly 40 nay votes.
And the yay votes. There were 8 Democrats plus Rand Paul. Was there a pattern there?
Yep. Those Democrats mostly fell into 2 camps, either retiring, like Dick Durbin or Gene Shaheen, so kind of immune to political fallout.
Right.
Or they represent purple states. Think Cortez Masto, Fetterman, Hassan, Kane, Rosen, King. And Kane, of course, has tons of federal workers in Virginia. Makes sense.
But hang on. If the Democrats were seen as winning the shutdown, public opinion-wise, why cash out now? Mm-hmm. Didn't they lose leverage to force concessions on the big spending bills they actually care about?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Look, they folded because the risk was that the real-world pain was about to get, well, really bad, unpalatable.
Okay.
Think about airport chaos right before Thanksgiving. Federal workers digging deeper into debt, that kind of suffering. It could have easily flipped public opinion against the Democrats. They looked like they were prioritizing politics over people hurting.
Ah, gotcha. So they traded that short-term leverage for what? A long game play.
Exactly. The big prize, or potential prize, was the promised vote on ACA subsidies.
Right. The Affordable Care Act subsidies.
Yeah. And politically, Democrats kind of win either way there. If the subsidies get restored, great. If Republicans vote them down, well, that gives the Democrats a huge issue, a real club to use in the 2026 elections. See, they voted against health care help.
Or if the majority leader just refuses to hold the vote.
Same outcome politically. It paints the Republicans as blocking help. It's a classic political setup, and it puts pressure on Speaker Johnson to reopen the House, which has its own knock-on effects.
Okay, so while Congress folded on the shutdown, we're seeing the executive branch maybe grabbing power elsewhere, specifically rewriting tax rules through regulation. Sounds like a big backdoor corporate tax cut.
Yeah, this is a really significant power shift we need to watch. The Trump administration seems to be using regulatory changes to basically weaken the Inflation Reduction Act's 15% corporate alternative minimum tax, the CAMT.
That was the tax designed to make sure huge corporations paid something, right?
Exactly. But the Treasury is changing the rules on how deductions work against it. And the beneficiaries look like big players, private equity, crypto firms, foreign real estate investors.
So what's the impact? Has this got the whole point of the CAMT?
Pretty much. The estimates are that most of the $222 billion the CAMT was supposed to bring in over 10 years, gone, wiped out, and without a single vote in Congress.
Wow. Billion.
Yeah.
$222 billion.
Mm-hmm. And it's drawing criticism even from, you know, right-leaning tax experts. Kyle Pomerleau at AEI basically said, Treasury is stepping on Congress's constitutional toes here. Congress is supposed to write tax law, not the executive branch through regulation.
But isn't some regulatory tweaking normal? Where's the line between, like, fine-tuning and just rewriting the law?
Well, that's the core debate, isn't it? Fine-tuning is one thing. But when the regulations seem to completely reverse the financial impact and, arguably, the intent of the law wiping out $222 billion, critics say that's effectively legislating from the Treasury Department. It bypasses the whole messy public debate in Congress.
Okay, shifting gears a bit, but still on institutional risk. There's this reported anxiety among Republican senators about a potential indictment of a Democrat, Adam Schiff. Why would Republicans be worried about their rival getting indicted? Seems counterintuitive.
It does, on the surface, but it's about precedent. The potential charge against Schiff involves claiming 2 homes, one in California, one in Maryland, as primary residences on mortgages. Apparently, that's a pretty common situation for members of Congress who have to live in 2 places.
Okay.
So the fear is, if Trump indicts Schiff on what some see as, let's say, shaky or politically motivated charges, well, that sets a really dangerous precedent. What stops a future Democratic administration from using similar, maybe questionable charges against Republicans in the exact same boat?
Ah, it's about weaponizing the legal system. Mutually assured destruction, almost.
Kind of. It's an institutional self-preservation instinct kicking in. They don't want that door opened.
Right. And speaking of accountability and legal battles, there was that big judicial ruling against Operation Midway Blitzes in Illinois. Judge Sarah Ellis.
Yeah, that was a pretty significant smackdown for federal law enforcement there. Judge Ellis put a stop to certain tactics like tear gas, pepper ball strikes on nonviolent people because of excessive violence.
And didn't she find that the commander lied?
Crucially, yes. She found the Border Patrol commander, Gregory Avino, repeatedly lied to the court, specifically about being hit with a rock before he threw gas. She basically said the government's evidence just wasn't credible.
Wow, so the courts are stepping in hard there.
They are. The order now requires things like body cams during certain actions, warnings before using chemical weapons, no riot gear against peaceful protesters. It's a clear case of the judiciary acting as a check when there are concerns the executive branch overstepped.
Okay, let's shift from DC power plays to what voters are actually thinking. We saw election analysis from G. Elliott Morris pointing to this widespread blue shift across key states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Jersey. What's the big takeaway there?
The really critical finding was that the Democratic margin grew compared to 2024 in almost all counties they looked at. Doesn't matter if the county was deep red, swing, or deep blue.
So a broad trend, not just isolated wins.
Exactly. It signals something widespread, either, you know, growing popularity for Democrats or maybe just widespread dislike of the current Republican brand or message. The analysis suggests the GOP needs to seriously rethink, maybe shift resources away from the national culture war stuff and back to local economic kitchen table issues before 2026.
And the failure of the anti-trans messaging in those governor races seems to really back that up, right? Earl Sears in Virginia, Ciattarelli in New Jersey, they leaned into it hard.
And they both lost big, got almost identical vote shares, around 42-point-something%. The analysis was pretty clear. That issue just wasn't a top concern for most voters. It ranked way below the economy, healthcare, immigration, education.
So feelings might not care about facts, but voters definitely care about their wallets first.
Seems that way. When people are struggling economically, that's priority number one. Culture war stuff just doesn't land the same way.
And the Democrats who won, like Spanberger in Virginia, they didn't just ignore the attacks.
No, that's key. Spanberger, for instance, ran ads hitting it head on, but reframing it around her own values, being a mom, kids in public schools, former law enforcement, wanting to improve schools. She met the attack, but pivoted back to her own ground, not just sticking to, say, purely progressive talking points, meeting voters where they are.
Interesting. We also saw some media reactions, specifically the Washington Post getting hammered by readers for that editorial on NYC mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani.
Yeah, that editorial calling him Generalissimo and accusing him of, like, class warfare instead of focusing on growth. Readers really pushed back, seeing it as the paper kind of shilling for the billionaire class, prioritizing elite growth over actual economic fairness for working people.
And that ties into this internal Democratic puzzle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You win big, but who do you prioritize now? The young progressive energy, like Mamdani in NYC, or the moderate model that worked in Virginia and Jersey?
That's the big internal fight shaping up, and you'll see it tested in the 2026 Senate primaries. Think Maine, Michigan, Massachusetts, Minnesota.
Right, like in Minnesota, you've got LTGov Peggy Flanagan, who's a Native American woman from the White Earth Nation, but potentially running against Rep. Angie Craig, who's a lesbian woman, both breaking barriers, but representing different wings, maybe different identities within the party.
Exactly. It's a major test of which blend of ideology and identity politics resonates most with Democratic primary voters moving forward.
And one quick side effect of all this political shuffling, Elise Stefanik is running for governor of New York now.
Yep, she announced. And apparently, House Democrats are kind of quietly cheering.
Cheering. Why?
They think her very Trumpy profile could actually hurt the whole GOP ticket in New York, potentially making it easier for Democrats to flip maybe three competitive House seats there, which, if that happened, could cost Mike Johnson his speaker's gavel. Politics makes strange bedfellows, huh? But underlying all this political maneuvering, as we said, is the economy. That University of Michigan survey, consumers' view of current economic conditions, it hit an all-time low.
An all-time low. Not just bad, but historically bad in terms of how people feel right now.
Yeah.
What are the numbers driving that? What costs are really hitting people since 2020?
The increases are just staggering. U.S. grocery prices up 29%.
Wow.
Transportation services, like getting around, up 36%. Eating out up 33%. And total credit card debt, this one's wild, jumped 50% since 2020.
Hold on, 50%?
Yeah.
A 50% jump in credit card debt? That's massive. Is that just people spending more or are they borrowing to survive?
It strongly suggests people are relying on high interest debt just to cover essentials. Look at housing. One in four U.S. households are spending over half their income just on rent.
Half their income on rent.
Yeah. And the overall purchasing power of the U.S. dollar. eroded by over 20%. These aren't abstract numbers. This is the pain people feel. And it helps explain why maybe those culture war messages fell so flat. People are worried about basics.
You see that kind of fragility reflected in the markets too, right?
Yeah.
Especially crypto. Bitcoin took a big hit. The whole market shed like $750 billion since October. What's going on there?
Well, according to Keith McCullough at HedgeEye, the problem isn't necessarily the technology itself. It's the leverage. It's how much debt and speculation got layered on top, especially as institutions got involved.
Leverage, meaning borrowed money magnifying bets.
Exactly. And Exhibit A is MicroStrategy, MSTR. It's still trading at like a 2.4x premium to the actual Bitcoin it holds.
Wait, explain that.
It means the market values the stock of MicroStrategy at more than double the value of the Bitcoin the company owns. To justify that stock price, Bitcoin would need to basically more than double, maybe hit $250,000 or something.
Right.
It just shows the extreme level of leverage and, frankly, speculation baked into the system. It looks like a bubble built on borrowed money, not necessarily fundamental value, a potential disaster waiting to happen.
Okay, so let's try to tie this all together. It's really interesting. We've seen these strategic retreats, like the shutdown deal, maybe driven by avoiding human suffering. We've seen the executive branch using regulation, these sort of backdoor power plays on taxes, and clear signals from voters rejecting culture wars, demanding focus on kitchen table economics.
Right. And if you connect those dots, it looks like the whole political system is scrambling, sometimes clumsily, to react to these deep, really painful economic realities people are facing. The big question is, will the parties actually pivot to address those core issues, inflation, debt, housing, or just keep fighting the last war? The battles voters seem to be tuning out.
So what does this all mean for you listening? It means you're navigating this world where the rules feel like they're changing constantly. And often it's not happening through a big debate in Congress, but through these regulatory shifts or court decisions that fly under the radar but have huge impacts. And here's maybe a final thought to chew on. The Democrats, sources suggest, cashed out on the shutdown, partly because things were about to get really grim for vulnerable people, folks on SNAP, veterans. If that's true, and voters are pushing back on ideological fights, does that mean the most reliable leverage in politics today isn't really about principles or party lines anymore, but about the immediate measurable pain of real people? Or maybe the clear-cut rulings from judges? Kind of raises a question. When political calculation only seems to break under the weight of human suffering or judicial force, what happens to the art of persuasion or finding common ground? Something to think about until our next deep dive.